The Lakers announcing all championship celebration plans are on hold due to the coronavirus pandemic. Perk, how big a deal is a parade to the players and the idea that they might have to put it off like 6 months, maybe even?
Rachel, that's part of winning the championship. In 08 when we won the championship and 2010 when we happened to be up 14 points going into the fourth quarter, I wasn't worried about the champagne. I was worried about getting to that parade where you have 2 million people out there hanging off of light poles and stuff and on top of buildings. That's what it's all about. And I was ready to go shirtless. I'm telling you, I was ready to take my shirt off.
Well, Jackie, we know J.R. Smith would have taken his shirt off if there was a parade. I mean, you guys talk about Boston, the duck boats. I mean, there's some great local traditions for a lot of these parades, too, right?
It's one of the most incredible things because, especially going down the streets of Boston, in many cases, when the Red Sox did it right by Fenway Park for Perk and the Celtics, they start over near the river where the Boston Garden is. I feel badly for these Laker players, but these are the times that we're living in. As you know, your kids are probably remotely home from
school.
Yes,
they are.
Everybody's making sacrifices, and this is mm-hmm. just another one of those, unfortunately.
Absolutely. But here's what I know after living in Los Angeles for the past 5 years. The people here will be fine to party later, that they will still be available to party later. So whenever it is permissible for lots of people to gather in the streets, Laker fans are going to show out. They don't have to worry about people not coming, not being festive, not feeling like they're not in the moment anymore. It's going to be fine. It is a shame they can't do it now. But as you say, Jackie, we are all doing things a little bit differently, including this show. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am thrilled to be back in our downtown L.A. studio and joined now remotely by NBA champ Kendrick Perkins and the Hall of Famer Jackie McMullen. And coming up, after the massive success of the NBA bubble, we're going to discuss which aspects of bubble life we want to keep in the NBA next season. Ooh. Everything is on the table. Minus the snitch hotline. I don't think they're keeping that. Stick around for that. But first, we begin today's show with an update on the coaching search in Houston. Adrian Wojnarowski and Tim McMahon reporting Clippers assistant coach Ty Lue, quote, gaining momentum for the Rockets head coaching job after a meeting with Houston's ownership and management on Monday. Ty, of course, won a title as a Cavaliers head coach in 2016. And no matter who replaces Mike D'Antoni, they are going to inherit a roster and a style of play that is so unique, different from the rest of the league. Starting lineup also takes up just about $120 million of cap space, so you're not getting a lot of help coming from other places. Ooh. Kendrick, how different do you expect the Rockets to look and play next season, given that Mike D'Antoni specifically was so associated with their style of play?
Well, it's going to be hard, like you said, Rachel. It's going to be hard for them to land a big man, right? So they're going to have to do what they got. And that's perfectly fine because they have a great core in Russell Westbrook and James Harden, two former MVPs that are still in their prime. And then you add a guy, a sixth man of the year winner, Eric Gordon, who could give you 20 off the bench along with Covington. And then you just add the other pieces, maybe land a Dwight Howard for low risk and high reward to anchor the middle in that defense. But although they may still be playing small, they're going to play small with structure. And that's what I strongly believe why T. Lue should be the coach of this Houston Rockets team, because he's going to bring that structure and that accountability to that Rockets organization.
Well, Perk, you did land on the three guys, Gordon, Harden, Westbrook, that are the heart and soul of this team, but they're also where all the money lies, and they're all signed for quite a long time. So even if Daryl Morey wanted to pull the trigger, Rachel, on something big, I'm not 100% sure he really can do that. You mentioned the middle too, Perk. You know, low rent, high risk, or I guess you said the other way, low risk, high yield. Maybe someone like Nerlens Noel fits that bill too. But my question is this. If you're Ty Lue, are you okay with James Harden dominating the ball? Because maybe what you want to do is maximize James Harden by having him give up the ball once in a while and getting him to move and cut. Wouldn't that be interesting to see? I think the next coach of the Houston Rockets has to try something new within the parameters of the talent they have. Westbrook, as we saw in the postseason, really struggled from the three-point line. He got baited into shooting it when he probably shouldn't have. Maybe you have to find ways to make him more successful. You've got to work with what you got because you don't have a lot of flexibility.
Well, here's what I know, Jackie, and it's such a good point. Ty Lue is very good at real talk with superstars. He has the credibility of having played in the league for so long, having coached now for a while, having won a title, and really being someone that stood up to LeBron James and Kyrie Irving during that title
run.
Right. There's all these stories of even in the locker room at halftime of Game 7 of the 2016 Finals, him going toe-to-toe with LeBron and having that respect. So clearly, he's someone who would feel comfortable saying to James Harden, hey, you got to be able to play a little bit more of another way. And I've seen a little bit of an evolution in James Harden. He committed to defense in a way throughout the season and particularly in the playoffs in a way that I frankly hadn't seen before. I think he knows that this pairing with Russell Westbrook is on him. He is the one who wanted Russ there. And if it requires maybe giving up the ball a little bit because Russ can't be the guy he kicks it out to and shoots, that's just not going to work with Russ's skill set right now.
Right.
Maybe he is a little bit more willing to listen if Ty Lue was the one delivering that message. Perk, it didn't get past me that you suggested Dwight Howard. I don't know if you're proposing that Dwight Howard do like a whole redemption tour now that he's done with now that he's won a title with the Lakers. He's going to now go redeem himself with the Rockets. He's going to have a lot of teams on that list if you're going to make him go do that.
Absolutely. And Rachel, like he's probably going to range from anywhere of the vet minimum to maybe, you know, close to $4 million a year, and the Rockets could afford that. And as we saw in this postseason, Dwight Howard still have a lot left in the tank. He's still one of the most athletic bigs in the league. And what they need right now, the Houston Rockets, is an athletic big, a dynamic roller, a guy that could anchor the defense, and Dwight Howard still could do that.
Well, we'll see. I'm sure the Lakers have some interest in retaining him as well, which is a nice thing to be able to say about Dwight after all of these years, having him be a wanted guy in the league again. I do want to get to another team, though, because Ty Lue also reportedly in the mix as a leading candidate for the Clippers and Pelicans coaching vacancies. The Clippers interviewed another assistant underdog, Sam Cassell, yesterday. So, Jackie, if you were Ty and you had to choose between these two, which is the more appealing job for you, the Clippers job or the New Orleans Pelicans job?
Well, I'm going to try to crawl inside of Ty's head. And I think he wants to win now. And if you want to win now, then you go to the Clippers. Now, a ton of pressure if you go there. Because think about it. It didn't work this year. It cost Doc Rivers his job, which I still can't believe. Mm-hmm. If you don't win next year, it may cost you Kawhi Leonard and Paul George because they can both decide, you know what? This isn't what we bargained for. We're out. I think Ty Lue relishes that. I don't think he'll mind it. And as we discussed just a moment ago, he can talk to these players in plain, tough talk. He's going to tell them what he expects, and he's going to expect them to deliver. And I think Kawhi will respond to that. And I think Paul George will as well. If I'm Ty, I'm running to that Clippers job.
Well, Jackie, you're running to it. I'm running away from it. And I'm looking down there in the bayou, and I'm going to the swamplands down there with David Griffin and the New Orleans Pelicans. You have Zion Williamson, a guy that is box office, a guy that the sky's the limit. I mean, he is shooting for the stars and probably is going to land right on the moon because he's everything that you want in a number one pick. And then you look at Brandon Ingram. Just those two guys alone make that job so attractive because not only if you take that job over, not only do you have something to prove as a coach, but those two individuals have something to prove. They're young, they're hungry, they're going to listen to you, they're going to follow into your game plan, into your guidance, they will trust you, and that's all you need. It's a less headache. You're going to have a team full of hungry guys along with J.J. Redick if they keep him, and Drew Holiday. So I'm looking at this Pelican roster, and I believe that they strongly could make a lot of noise in the Western Conference, possibly finishing in the fifth seed with the right hire. So a lot of coaches are looking at this job, and it's very attractive, and rightfully so.
I love this Pelicans job. I think it is a win when you walk in the door because of, as you say, the expectations are let's just make the playoffs, right? And with that roster, you should absolutely be able to make the playoffs. Zion has the potential to be a generational player and the kind of guy that later we could look back 10 years from now and say, you had the chance to hook up and like have a partnership with Zion Williamson and you didn't do it and you're crazy. But his health, and Jackie, I don't know where you are on this, It's not speculative.
Exactly.
Zion missed half the season this past year. And then when it came time to be in the bubble, they were extremely conservative with him in the bubble as well. Missed some key games that kept them from possibly being in the seeding game. So we know how David Griffin is managing him. That is a given when you're walking into this job. Jackie, how much would that concern you?
Well, of course it would. That's why I answered the way I did. Perk, everything you said is true. Everything you said is true, except for this. If I'm a coach, I want to win now, and I want to win with two guys that I know are healthy, that are going to both, that are both first time, you know, like first all team in a good year. Paul George did not have a good year. Can he have a better year? We'll see. He was hurt as well. But when you talk about Zion, who wouldn't want to coach him? Everybody would, but there's no guarantee yet that he's going to have a chance to get to where you're going, where you're talking about. We have to wait and see. And they should be careful with him. I don't disagree at all with what David Griffin did. I'm sure it was frustrating for Alvin Gentry and even Zion himself. But David Griffin was handling this the exact right way.
Well, these are good problems to have, right? If you're Ty Lue and someone who I think we all believe deserves these opportunities to have the Clippers, to have Houston, to have the Pelicans all
100%.
Interested in you. That's pretty great. He's such a good X and O coach. He's so good
right.
at dealing with players. I look forward to seeing where he succeeds next. All right, coming up on this show, we will be talking about the NBA and whether they should keep playing games moving forward. I have some feelings about that, guys, so we'll talk about that next. We'll also give you one last look at everything that happened inside of the bubble. But first, it's time for Distant Replay. This date, 1 year ago, featuring the two teams who made it all the way to the NBA Finals nearly 1 year later. Let's check them out.
Percentage shots just really outrunning Miami. Nice pass.
Ooh.
For the Jones Jr.
Ooh, there we go.
Oh.
It really is amazing. In the offseason, we usually don't have distant replays because nobody's been playing basketball, but this offseason, we'll have all the distant replays you need, people. It's really fun, too, watching these guys knowing what was going to happen to them a year later, right?
What was going to happen next? Incredible.
Bam, there's good stuff ahead for you.
Norvell puts Poole down.
I see the future.
Eldries is the future.
Dwight, it's going to go well for you. This is good. I can just talk to all the highlights about how happy they're going to be a year from now. I'm the streets voice out
west, legendary self-made. The Jump is brought to you by Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
The NBA restart is underway.
Months of planning has led us here.
The game of basketball has always been bigger than just the ball in the rim.
Let's go!
Am I supposed to be looking at somebody?
He's going to shoot two, and they'll retain possession of the ball.
How about this crowd?
He got it! And the Suns win the game! The explosion of John Morant! That's a bomb!
It's, it's meant for more than just fame.
Police shooting of Jacob Blake has sparked an outcry from those in the NBA.
We keep loving this country, and this country does not love us back.
Despite the overwhelming plea for change, there has been no action. So our focus today cannot be on basketball.
We found something worth fighting for.
They are the comeback kids from Colorado.
Hey, Daddy.
Blocked by Harden. What a play. Doncic pulls up. Three-pointer. Bang! Bang!
Ananobi.
Oh! I have seen it all.
The best team in the NBA is gone.
Got it, Jimmy Buckets. Incredible performance here on the bubble.
We've been underdogs our whole life.
Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis!
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers.
It's one of the greatest feelings in the world. Right up there, one of the greatest accomplishments I have.
Welcome back to The Jump. That is so cool to watch. Shout out to our ESPN event crew who put that together. What a ride. I'm Rachel Nichols, still joined by Kendrick Perkins, Jackie McMullen. Woo, Perk, if we want to spin forward, are there any rules from the bubble you would like to see carry over into next season?
Absolutely. Look, Rachel, I was all against the play-in, right?
I
was totally against it.
I got the receipts.
And after watching the bubble, yeah, I know you do. I know, look, the Jump and you, y'all keep receipts on Perk. That's why I got to make sure I cross my T's and dot my I's before I say anything. But that play-in game, those play-in games were phenomenal. It set the tone for the playoffs. And I think that it would be fun to watch those because when you look at the regular season, when it's a normal season, towards the end, either guys are getting ready to go on a Cancun trip,
yep,
or guys are resting up getting ready for the postseason. And so towards the end of the season, it starts to get a little boring. Well, that brought some excitement to it because guys start playing meaningful games. So the all-in games, the play-in games, I'm all in for it.
Wow. I'm really surprised, Perk. I have to be honest with you. I thought they were really exciting. I thought they were really fun, too. But there's already this bad narrative about the NBA that the regular season doesn't count. If you keep going along with these play-in games, all you're going to do is cement that idea that the regular season doesn't count. And the regular season should count. And the seeding should matter. But you know what I did love from the bubble? Was that Oculus camera, that view from up above where they freeze everything and show you how incredible these athletes truly are. You can sit back and feast on it. I love that. Let's keep bringing that. But Rachel, please, throw it out with the dishwater. Throw out the plexiglass. Throw out all that other stuff. And please throw out that camera where it's on the level of the game. My goodness. I was screaming at my set every time that was on. Thankfully, fans should be back because that's got to go.
So wait, I got producer Danny in my ear. The stuff that we were just watching cycle through was from the camera Jackie doesn't like, correct? Producer Danny? All right, so he's telling me in my ear, correct. Jackie, I love those angles. I want to make sure I was talking about the right thing.
Why?
The basket level? We've never seen anything like that before. Look at this. Look at this, Michael Porter Jr. And why would you not want to see those guys go at it at that level? Now, they haven't been able to do that in the past because fans have been sitting in the spot where the camera was.
Right.
But again, when you're coming into these arenas next season, they're going to be lucky, frankly, if they get fans in these buildings at all. And I don't expect 20,000 fans to pack in, so they could certainly block off an area for the Oculus Cam. And I do like the playing game also, Perk. I'm with you on that. And Jackie, I guess I would just say I agree with you that the regular season has to be meaningful. I have been beating that drum right behind you this whole time. I think it's still meaningful if, A, you know those are the rules from the beginning. So putting yourself in position to even compete for a play-in spot happens during the regular season. And I just think, like with everything else, we can't have an all-or-nothing mentality, right? So it doesn't mean that the regular season is worthless if we have a play-in game. It's a nuance. And it's one of those things that for those 3 to 5 teams in that small range of getting into that 8th seed, the regular season is going to come down to the play-in game, almost the way teams compete to be in the playoffs. And then whatever happens in the playoffs, it doesn't make the regular season meaningless if, say, the Milwaukee Bucks get eliminated in the second round. It's what happens once you get into that level of competition. So that is what would happen. We would just be doing it a little bit earlier with some of the teams for and in a play-in game. I'm on board, but Jackie, I will say that Adam Silver seemed to be more thinking along your lines because I asked him right during the finals, hey, what about the play-in game? People want to keep it. And he has been himself a proponent of the play-in game, but he indicated in a very nice and gracious way that perhaps it did not have the support of ownership yet. So we will see, and it's got to get that support to be able to move forward. All right, I hear the opening bell. I can hear it before anyone else. It's my power of hearing. Look, now you guys hear it. It's amazing. It's almost like it's just a button or something. We're going to play the stat market. Jimmy Butler had one of the best clutch numbers of the last 20 postseasons. Seriously, I want to show you those numbers next. Ask about Butler's chances to be an MVP finalist next season. Stick around. You're watching The Jump. We have a lightweight unification bout on Saturday night, a 12-round main event in Las Vegas. Our coverage begins at 10 Eastern, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the app. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols here with Kendrick Perkins, Jackie McMullen. Our researchers have been digging into all the NBA bubble numbers, and they're good. That means it's time to open up the stat market. We give you the numbers. You buy or sell whether these trends will continue. So don't think MPJ can score the basketball. Well, guess what? He increased his points per game by 14 and a half. Now, obviously, a lot of that's opportunity. He was the Nuggets' third leading scorer inside the bubble. So, Kendrick, buy or sell Michael Porter Jr. as the Nuggets' third star going forward?
Oh, Rach, I'm going to the dealership and buy me a Ferrari, and I'm paying cash for it because that's what Michael Porter Jr. is. This kid is a flat-out stud. And look, before he got hurt before the draft, he could have potentially been the number one pick. He's that good. He's a walking bucket. He's a great third option for Denver. Now, with that being said, a thing that Michael Porter Jr. has to learn is what he learned in the bubble is I want him to knock out all the outside distractions and make sure that he buy into the team and buy into Coach Mike Malone and buy into his role and know that he's going to be that third option guy behind Jamal Murray and Big Jokic, and he'll be perfectly fine. So I'm buying him all the way. Cash money.
All right, Perk, I'm going to take all my money out of the bank. I'm going to buy a Maserati, and ooh, I'm going to hold it up right alongside you for Michael Porter Jr. But here's what I'm going to be whispering in his ear. I'm going to be whispering in his ear, we know you're an offensive stud. We know you, nothing. Pressure does not bother you. We saw that many times in the bubble. You have to defend. You can't be indifferent to it. You've got to spend all, I was going to say summer, but now it's winter, working on your defense, being part of our team defensive concept. If you do that, you're a more complete player. I can keep you on the floor longer because I can have you close out at the end of the games when we're ahead. This kid is going to be a flat-out star.
I really like him, and getting to know him a little bit better in the bubble was really interesting because I think that he is the kind of character guy that Denver wants. I just think he's learning. Right? I mean, we kind of forget not only how young he actually is, but he's even younger in basketball years because you're right, Perk. He was projected as the number one overall pick before he got hurt, but that was well before the NBA draft. So he, of course, got drafted, sat out more, was used sparingly because we know that Mike Malone doesn't like to throw rookies in there. You got to prove it to him before he's willing to put you in a game. So he really has so little game experience under his belt compared to a lot of other guys, even his age. And I think that he will learn a little bit about all the things you guys are both talking about as they go. They have such a good system there. Jackie, you are unofficial Denver Nuggets expert from here on out. So I'm
love
anything,
love
anything you say on the Nuggets, I'm in for. That's it. Jackie says, Jackie knows. Let's talk a little bit about the Suns because in the restart, they managed to go 8-0 in their seeding games. Now, that wasn't enough to get them into the playoffs, which says a lot, but certainly encouraging if you're a Suns fan, paging our researcher Michael Schwartz. Jackie, buy or sell the Suns finishing above 500 next season? I'm not saying they have to go 82-0. We're not saying they have to continue the bubble, but will they go over 500? Right. Will they have a winning record?
Rach, I desperately want to drive my Maserati over to the Phoenix Suns and spend all my money on them. But I can't, and it's not because I don't believe in them. I do. I think Monty Williams is a great coach for that team. Devin Booker's a star. DeAndre Ayton can get there. They have some really nice young pieces that prove themselves in the bubble. Here's the but. The Golden State Warriors are back. We know they're not going to finish last in the Western Conference again. So my rule is always, if you're going to put a team up, you have to take a team out and pull them down. Who is that team in this loaded West? What about the Memphis Grizzlies, who I believe finished just above them?
Yep.
So I want to believe the Suns can get there. I'm just not 100% sure they can.
Well, guess what? My financial advisor is going to be mad at me because I'm going back to the dealership. And I might buy me a Rolls Royce truck or a Benz. I'm going to say a Benz. I'm going to keep it low. And I'm buying it. The Phoenix Suns, what they proved in the bubble, when they were finally healthy and had everybody except for Kelly Oubre, was that they're a team that could get it done collectively. We all know how great of a coach, good of a coach, Monty Williams is. He showed us that with the Pelicans, but now he have those guys believing. He have those guys trusting in him, and guys know their roles. We have to remember the Phoenix Suns were not healthy majority of the season, and DeAndre Ayton had the suspension early in the season,
what
hurt them also.
That's
so
true.
When they finally got their chemistry and rhythm back, you was like, wow, who is this Phoenix Suns team? This is who they're going to be in the near future right here. They gave us an example in the bubble.
Well, they've had high draft picks, I think, since like the 1920s at this stage. I mean, they've had so much talent that they've scooped up to go in there, or at least the chances of talent. I guess this is almost an inadvertent watching the process play out, and we will see if they're able to get above 500 next season. I do want to get to the guy that led the Heat to the finals. Mr. Jimmy Butler, money, money, money in clutch time in the playoffs, shooting 57% from the field when it matters most. That's not just good for the bubble, that's just good for the playoffs. That was among the best percentages in the last two decades of playoff basketball. And of course, clutch guys, the last 5 minutes of the game when the score is within 5 points. So Jackie, given Jimmy Butler's ability to close, his leadership intangibles, do you buy or sell him as an MVP finalist next season? So that's top three.
I want to buy him as an MVP finalist because in my mind, he's the kind of player that should be. Everything he did in the bubble to me was just tremendous. And he completely disproved the idea that you have to be a three-point threat to be an MVP caliber player. Clearly, that's not who Jimmy Butler is, nor that's who he wants to be, nor, by the way, is that who the Miami Heat wants him to be. So when I tell you I'm selling, I'm not selling Jimmy Butler, because he's one of the top five players I'd like to have on my team. But when you start talking about MVP voting, you talk about high-volume scoring. And the Miami Heat are at their best when Jimmy Butler doesn't have to score 40, when you're getting scoring from Dragic and Bam Adebayo and Duncan Robinson and, in the future, I would guess Tyler Hero as well. So I think the way Jimmy Butler plays, which is behooves the Heat and is great for the Heat, will make it difficult for him to win this award you're referring to.
Well, guess what? I'm buying, and I'm buying more. I'm buying a lot of real estate
today. Kirk's going to have no money
and
left
I'm going
by the time
Jimmy
this is
Butler.
Over.
He's the truth.
Kirk, you're broke. Kirk.
I'm going all in. Jimmy Butler is the prime example of what an MVP means to his team. And he was just that. He was the most valuable player to his team. What would that team be without Jimmy Butler? They wouldn't have made it to the finals, I tell you that much. And the performance that he put on in the NBA Finals, it made me realize that he was already a star to me. But now I was able to put the super in front of that because when the lights got brighter, Jimmy Butler stepped his game up and elevated his game like no other. Those 40-point triple-doubles and those triple-doubles he was putting up in the finals was phenomenal. And I think the way that he went about carrying his team post-game interviews, instilling confidence into his teammates, I can only imagine what he was saying in the locker room. So as of right now, I'm buying that Jimmy Butler could be an NBA finalist next year.
Well, I love this question and I love this discussion because it, of course, exemplifies what I've been talking about on the show for 5 years, that we have to decide what most valuable means, right? And if it is just the stats and the scoring, you are absolutely right, Jackie. He is not going to come into that stratosphere with some of the high number guys that we know are going to be putting things up in this league, whether it's Giannis, whether it's a guy like LeBron, whether it's Kevin Durant when he comes back. But value to the team is more than scoring. It just is. And we have to start deciding. And maybe Jimmy's a great place to have this discussion because LeBron is so polarizing, right, that all these other feelings come into play when you're talking about who is the most valuable, not stat-oriented, but valuable player in the league. Well, let's talk about Jimmy Butler, who is not polarizing at all. Basketball fans love Jimmy Butler pretty much across the board. And you're right, Perk. It's not just what he does on the court. He can score a 40-point triple-double in the NBA Finals when he needs to, but he recognizes there are games he's not going to do that. He's not, as you say, Jackie, a big three-point threat, but he has maintained and fostered relationships on that team like no star I have seen in a long time. Every player I talked to in the Miami Heat locker room was like, well, I have a special relationship with Jimmy. That's because Jimmy worked his butt off over the last season to make sure that he knew family members, he knew friends, parents. He had that team so together and playing as one heartbeat. The defense, the fight that he put in that team, that is value. And we just have to start deciding what MVP is for. And maybe, again, as I say, if we want to recognize big scoring and stats, maybe we have a best season, most outstanding season award. This is going to keep going, and Jackie is going to keep, well, she bears with me when I have this talk, and so do the producers, except they made the closing bell. The stat market done for the day. We'll be back with another edition soon. Thank you, Jackie. Coming up, Rajon Rondo. Not thank you because she's leaving, but just she's very patient with me, and I appreciate that. She's a Hall of Famer. Rajon Rondo, now a champion for the Celtics and Lakers. Which version of Rondo was more impressive? I have been so excited to ask this question all day. Next on The Jump.
Whatever happened to the Los Angeles dynasty? You guys were talking about a dynasty. Here's where it is, right here.
Oh, that Celtics-Lakers rivalry runs deep, and I am here with the perfect people to discuss this. Kendrick Perkins, Jackie McMullen. So the Lakers 2020 championship has stirred up a lot of debate over Lakers titles, which one should count toward their franchise total, right? Because both the Celtics and the Lakers now officially have 17 championships apiece. These teams have met in the finals a record 12 times. There are people who live on the, eastern Massachusetts side of the country who believe that LA should only have claimed to the last 12 titles, and here is why. The Minneapolis Lakers were the first actual dynasty in pro basketball. They won 5 out of 6 from 1949 to 1954, led by the great George Mikan, who was named to the NBA's top 50 players list. Now, in 1960 is when the franchise moved to Los Angeles. And many feel ignored their early history for years. In fact, the Lakers themselves officially recognized the 5 Minneapolis titles with a banner only in 2002. That's how long it took. The Lakers wore throwback jerseys and handed out ceremonial rings to Hall of Fame members of the Minneapolis Lakers. By the way, the Lakers still have not retired George Mikan's 99 jersey. So the argument from people in, Boston, Jackie, is that if they didn't even think they counted, how are the Lakers now saying they counted? And other franchises that have moved, like the Thunder, don't exactly celebrate what was won in past cities. So do you think we should really count, Jackie, all 17 Lakers titles?
I do, and I have a simple solution for you. Retire George Mikan's number in the rafters of the Staples Center and then bring him into the fold. He belongs there anyway. My goodness, there's a drill named after him. I had to do it 400 times. You know what I'm talking about, Mark? The Mikan drill. So that I think it gets too complicated if you're going to start talking about when teams move and just subtracting those. I'm not in favor of that. I do live in New England on the East Coast. But I'm not putting a stamp on it. The Lakers have 17 titles. The Celtics have 17 titles. That's the way it is. Deal with it, Boston fans. Sorry.
Well, Rachel, Jackie, what else did y'all expect from the Boston fans? You know these fans wasn't going to be pleased with that. That's one thing that they could hold over the NBA, especially their rivalry of the Lakers, is that we have 17, y'all have 16, and now it's even. Of course, they was going to bring that up, but I'm with you, Jackie. Look, the Lakers have 17. We're not going to start that, because if that's the case, we could go back into the Boston days where it went from the ABA to the NBA, and some people could raise question marks about that, and we're not going to do that. Look, championships are championships. They're hanging up in the Raptors for a reason, so I'm sorry, Boston fans. It is tied up 17-17. Win another one, and you could break the tie.
So you guys are both letting our Boston area, Boston native producer Andy, you're letting him down. But I do agree with both of you. You can't start messing around with this. And I will say this. There's all different kinds of conditions that you win a title under, Perk. You're absolutely right. It's a championship the year you win it, right? You are competing with other teams playing under the same conditions. You're not competing with teams playing 30 years in the future. So the year you won it against the teams you played, you won it. That's a title. You earn and you keep the title. But while we're on the topic of Celtics-Lakers, there's another thing that fans have been fighting over, Rajon Rondo. He became the first player to win a championship with both teams in this era, and we're not necessarily lumping in Clyde Lovelett because he's the only other guy to do it, and he did it with Boston and Minneapolis. But regardless, playoff Rondo was back. So, Perk, really fascinating to look at Celtics Rondo, who was the young gun on a team with vets, and Lakers Rondo, who was the vet on a team with mostly a lot of younger players. Who do you prefer, Celtics Rondo or Lakers Rondo? Who's more impressive to you professionally? I know personally you're Celtics Rondo all the way.
Well, look, first of all, I hope that I don't lose any love for from my Boston fan base and my Boston family. But I have to go with this year's championship with the Lakers, and here's why. Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and KG was the big three. Rondo and myself just happened to be the other two. That's what we called ourselves. But when you look at this Laker championship, Rondo was actually part of the big three. He was what the Lakers wanted Kuzma to be. Rondo was the third best player, in my opinion, on the Lakers team. And the Lakers wouldn't have won a championship without Rondo. And the best thing happened to the Lakers, besides obviously LeBron James and Anthony Davis, is that Rondo returned to the bubble and was ready to play second round, third round, and then the finals to help them win their 17th championship. So sorry, Boston fans, I gotta roll with Lakers Rondo for us with the impact that he had on them winning the championship.
All right, Perk, I got news for you. They're going to be egging our Maseratis and our Benzes and all those other cars we just bought on the last segment because I'm going to agree with you. And, you know, I had a front row seat to watch the 2008 Boston Celtics. I watched the clutch play that a young Rondo, many, many plays in that series. But here's the thing about this Rondo. Think about it, guys. This is the, oh my gosh, I might be out of the league Rondo. This is a guy who told me in a story I did with him recently that before every round they played, he would look at the opponent's film and he would find the player that was most akin to his own skill set and fastidiously study every clip of that film so he would know ahead of time how they were going to play him. He also told me, I want to be the best role player in the bubble. I think we would get convinced, hands down, slam dunk, that he wins that title. Also, the way he handled these young players, and when LeBron or somebody else got tough with him, he's the guy that took him to dinner. He's the guy that put his arm around him. He's the guy that told Kuzma, we're not giving up on you. All of those reasons, the grown-up Rondo, it's so impressive. It doesn't mean we don't love 2008 Rondo. Of course we do. He was so spunky, but this Rondo is a vet who's seen it all. And then I agree with you. Without him, the Lakers do not win the 17th championship.
Absolutely not. It is fascinating talking to him at this point in his career, too, because we all knew him back then. He was young, right? Now he's talking about how he not only maybe wants to be a coach, because as you know, Jackie, he is so great at film and recall and all of that stuff. Yeah. He said that he might want to be a GM. He said he's really gotten into team construction.
I think he'd be a great GM.
And that he thinks that he would be great in the front office, too. So I love these pictures side by side, by the way, because he's got the same expression basically on his face 12 years later. And just the hair is a little different. Otherwise, you could pretty much swap them. We might see a lot of Rajon Rondo for a lot of years to come in this league, even once his playing career is done. And I think the NBA is better for it. All right, up next, the Thunder's playoff run might have been the biggest surprise of the NBA season. But should Oklahoma City and Chris Paul run it back? They're already going to change coaches. We'll discuss this next. This is a pretty fascinating team conundrum here. Stick with us. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Brian Windhorst's piece, What We Know and Don't Know Heading Into Next Season. This has everything. Like we were talking at the break about when next season will start, this has stuff on that. Will free agency work? Will there be a summer league? Brian's got all the answers. Check it out on ESPN.com.
Where did you celebrate?
In our
hotel rooms.
In the hotel rooms. In your individual
hotel rooms? We had a restaurant dedicated to us to go out and celebrate as a team. So it was pretty cool.
Did you break off into smaller groups afterwards, or did you celebrate the whole time as a team?
No, we celebrated the whole time as a team. All the coaches, you know, the players, the families that came in, ownership, front office. So everyone came in. Celebrate.
I know LeBron was the most valuable player on Sunday night. Who was the most valuable partier at the party on Sunday night?
Sunday? I think everybody. I mean, everybody. There's a lot of guys who had their first, who got their first championship, so we're all, you know, in wheelchairs headed back to our hotels.
That is amazing. And I have to tell you, one of the strangest things of all the strange things being in the bubble, guys, and the fact that, like, teams would leave an arena where they were at each other's throats, the buses would go back to the same place, and they'd have to ride up to the room in the elevator together. The coda on that was when there was finally a championship trophy won. There is only one restaurant, really, that he's talking about where this party could have happened. They gave it over to the Lakers, which meant that the Miami Heat, who were still there that night, they didn't leave till the morning, kept walking by and saw the Lakers victory party at the restaurant, as did all the media and staff and everybody else in the bubble. So it was crazy and weird. And apparently they had a most valuable partier that involved wheelchairs. I don't know. Paul Pierce maybe should have been there. I don't know.
Ooh, there's a shot.
Is that a shot? It's not a shot.
PP.
It turned into one of the greatest nights of Paul Pierce's life. That's not a shot. Crunch time here on The Jump. According to Fanatics, the Lakers have become the top-selling champion in the merchandise company history. Fans bought more Lakers merchandise in 12 hours than the previous record holder, the 2016 Cavaliers, sold in 30 days. Perk, does this surprise you at all?
Not at all. And just go and watch Snoop Dogg Instagram, and you can see how fired up the Lakers were for this championship. Just think about everything that happened for us, the pandemic, and then the great Kobe Bryant dying. The Laker fans were waiting on this, and then all the nonsense that they got to hear from the other team in town, the Clippers and all the Clipper fans that were talking noise. The Laker fans couldn't wait for this moment. I'm surprised it took that long to sell out. I thought it was only going to take about 30 minutes.
Well, of course, the Lakers have the most merchandise sale. Why? Because they wait. They're a wait-and-see kind of fan base. We know this about them. They show up late in the game. I'm telling you, they're a wait-and-see fan base. When the Lakers finally won, the floodgates, I'm telling it like it is.
See, that that's doesn't a mean shot, Jackie.
Look, it's Hollywood. There's a lot of competition.
That's a little bit of a shot.
There's a lot of competition in Hollywood. You got to win before these guys are going to open their wallets. But once you do, they're going to strut down the street in that purple and gold, and good for them. Enjoy it. You won. You deserve it.
I'm not following up with that. Let's move on to Danilo Gallinari. He says he values contending for a championship over money in free agency. So, Jackie, which contending team would make the most sense for Gallo?
Well, if you were the Miami Heat and you were flirting with Gallinari before and you wanted to win right away and not worry about preserving your cap space for a year from now, just in case, someone like Giannis might be available, I think he would make great sense with the Heat, but I think we know what the Heat's going to do. They're going to hang on to their cap space. They're going to take care of Bam Adebayo, and they probably will not move on Gallinari. But just picture him on the Miami Heat. It would be fabulous. He'd be good with the Sixers, too, but they can't afford him either.
Well, it all depends on what he's asking for. If he's asking for a vet minimum, he might want to come down here to Houston, Texas, and join Russell Westbrook and James Harden. He will be a great addition to this Houston Rockets club if for the right price. So I'm thinking of Gallinari, and I'm saying, you know, you might want to take a look down here to H-Town. This might be the place for you for the vet minimum.
Well, if he's not going to be in Oklahoma City, it's going to cause further changes to the Thunder. They made the playoffs as the fifth seed in the highly contested Western Conference. But, Jackie, what should OKC do now? They've obviously signaled that they're going to go a different direction. That's why Billy Donovan left. Gallo doesn't sound like he's staying. What do you think is going to happen with this team?
They got to blow it up. It's a rebuilding process right now, Rachel. They have to blow it up. and get rid of Steven Adams and Chris Paul.
Jackie.
Isn't that a shame, though, because they had such a great year? Aren't they tempted to just see what would happen if they stood pat one more year? Clearly they're not, because to your point, Billy Donovan is leaving. But, man, no. I loved watching them play. It would be great to sit with the band together.
Well, I'll be on Chris Paul Watch now. We're out of time for today, but back tomorrow.